This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Get your special solar glasses ready and call your family and friends because the countdown is on. August 21st, many communities across the United States will witness a total solar eclipse for the first time in nearly 100 years. And while sky watchers will thrill at the spectacle, scientists see this as an opportunity for special discoveries. Eclipses help them examine the outer layer of the sun and get new insights into space weather patterns. Joining us today to talk about sun science is Rachel Smith. She's an astronomer who heads the Astronomy and Astrophysics Research Lab at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. She's going to talk at the museum this weekend as part of their International Sun Day event. But first, she joins me in the studio. Rachel Smith, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, okay, we're going to be all kind of hyped up about this thing, and we got our special glasses. But tell us exactly what's going to happen now and why this one is so special.
Well, it's special for North Carolina because it's the first one in a very long time to come to the state. So I think people are going to be pretty excited in this state, and a lot of people are making plans to go be in that path of totality, which is really where the sun is 100% eclipsed. And that is a big difference than even a 98 or 99% because the sun is so bright that you wouldn't see that much of a change. And I've never actually personally seen a total solar eclipse, but I understand it's just experiencing it being outside is pretty spectacular. And you see kind of the sun will be, it'll become more like a twilight and birds and plants will respond. And so there are some citizen science projects being conducted around the country related to what are birds doing, what are plants doing, and because they kind of go home to roost and respond as if it's becoming dusk, and so that's pretty cool.
Really cool in North Carolina. Asheville is kind of sky zero for this, right? I mean, in terms of
So the whole western there, it will pass through the western part of the state and also into South Carolina. In Asheville, there's a it'll probably pass through there, and the I know that into the basically through the western part of the state and Tennessee and parts of there as well. So
it's going to be a lot of fun for us. But what about scientists? Because I know that this is a kind of special time when you can do some unique observations, right?
Right. So solar astronomers historically have taken advantage of total solar eclipses, and new science being conducted will relate to looking at the corona. So as you mentioned, this outer kind of, it's like this outer atmosphere, so to speak, of the sun. And it is hard to observe that when the sun is just bright, and even satellites that can do it like an artificial eclipse are not quite the same as a natural eclipse. And so solar astronomers will be able to investigate these storms coming off the surface and solar flares and even other planets that'll become visible. So one example is Mercury, which will be behind the moon at the time of the eclipse. And I know there's a study to look at the temperature of Mercury. And so even now, the eclipses give scientists some really cool opportunities.
But it's like this rare moment because you've got just a few minutes, right?
That's
so you
right.
Better make sure that the flash is, you know, working on your telescope, right?
Well, yeah, even so the pictures, you know, there will be time lapse. There will be a lot of photography, a lot of video. It's safe, actually, to look at the sun when it's totally eclipsed. The issue is you don't want to ever look at the sun even when it's partially eclipsed. Mm-hmm. So that's why the solar glasses are important. So it'll be a little over 2.5 minutes in total. And but that's a lot of time, actually, to conduct some cool science.
So the corona is one thing. And also you talked about the sort of the electromagnetic pulse. And there's a chance for flares. Is that it? Or to study some of the electromagnetic phenomena that comes from the sun? And that might even be affected by the eclipse.
Right. So one interesting thing. So we have this space weather. And space weather is a general term for all of this high energy effects of the sun basically that can come towards Earth, and we're protected in large measure by our magnetic field and atmosphere. But one interesting thing is actually radio frequencies are affected by the eclipse, and you can apparently hear a dimming of the radio. And so there'll be some studies of that and how really understanding how the sun affects radio frequencies. And this is important for if there are major solar flares, how the grid, the communications grid, grid across the Earth can be affected. And this has happened in historically in the past with some major solar storms.
What have we learned in the past from eclipses? I know there have been some pretty interesting discoveries along the
way. Yeah, one interesting discovery actually that I found interesting was the discovery of helium, which is the second most abundant element in the universe, was discovered actually on the sun during a total eclipse way back a few thousand years ago. And that's pretty cool. And actually, understanding the shape of the Earth by looking at its shadow on the moon during a solar eclipse was done by astronomers a long, long time ago. And so we've learned some really things that we may take for granted now as basic knowledge actually from solar eclipses and also from lunar eclipses.
Well, let's pivot a little bit and talk about sun-related science. You are an observational astronomer. So tell us what that means. What do you do?
So I observe. I use telescopes to observe cosmic things. And so my interest is in forming stars. And these are stars in our galaxy. And I'm particularly interested in the chemistry of these systems before planets form, and really trying to understand the chemical pathways for elements like carbon and oxygen that are critical for planets and life. And so we can really understand better how planets might form, and eventually the molecules for life could form by investigating the chemistry in systems that are actually before their planets form now, and much like our solar system was about 4.5 billion years ago.
That leads to the question that we philosophical humans ask, why us, right? Why is Earth the place where life evolved? And you can sort of ask that question in reverse or working forward from the Big Bang or backward from where we are today.
Right. Well, as far as we know, this is the only planet with life, but that's the whole question is that true? And it's there's certainly statistically speaking, there's so many planets. There's possibly billions of Earth-like planets situated in that perfect place, right in this Goldilocks zone, from their orbiting their star, where there's liquid water on the surface. And there's certainly been many discoveries of lots of habitable planets, and perhaps throughout the galaxy. And then you have billions of galaxies in the universe. But unfortunately, our technology now limits us in what we can say for certain. And right now, still, the Earth is the only planet where we know for sure that there's life. But there's plenty of people, including myself, that are interested in seeing if that's really the truth.
Of course, there are even bigger questions, life as we know it.
Exactly.
But then we don't know. I mean, broadly define life as sort of reproductive and various other characteristics, could there be other forms that don't need water, for instance?
That's
Could survive hotter or colder climates.
It's certainly possible. We have to start with what we know. So right now, as far as we know, all life is carbon-based and needs liquid water, at least at some phase of its development and its life cycle. So we start with what we know in terms of looking for life in general. And then this is the NASA-based search for life on other planets, and we have rovers on Mars looking for signs of potential life. And this is a big interest in looking at exoplanets as well. If you want to think about intelligent life, that's a whole other question of what could be out there. And space is really, really big, so it's certainly possible it's out there, and we just haven't found evidence for it yet.
As I read the headlines, I wonder if intelligent life could ever evolve on Earth. Do you think that's possible? I mean, just abstract, could it ever happen? Well, let's talk about the Earth, though, and what we know now. And again, you talk about us being in the Goldilocks zone, but we're not staying there, are we? I mean, we're moving kind of in one direction and the other. What's your sense of how long we stay in the Goldilocks zone and what that means for life as we know it on this
planet? Well, it's a great question to think about. And eventually, we're not going to be in the Goldilocks zone, because in a few billion years, the sun is going to swell up. It'll definitely only last around 10 billion years. So we're about halfway there. But before that, probably the sun will become too bright for life to exist as we know it on Earth. And then the question is, well, what will happen then? And, we have to think about, where are we going to go in our solar system, perhaps? And where could we ever travel beyond that? And these are questions we can't really answer yet, because the technology is really in its infancy.
And the research itself, you talked about the fact that our research is in many ways stalled. We had a robust space program that sort of culminated with the orbiting space, the Challenger program.
But the shuttle program.
Yeah. And so where are we now in terms of astrophysics and the kind of basic research we need to answer those vital questions?
Well, in terms of the human space program, we're just in sending our own astronauts up. We're a bit in a stage where we're between programs, essentially, and there's a push to combine NASA efforts with private industry and use SpaceX or other companies to help send astronauts to space. So right now, the space program is still operational in terms of astronauts flying with Russian cosmonauts. And so that's still, but as far as our own initiatives, we're kind of in that phase of, in terms of sending humans to space, of being still a little bit, you know, we're still using the same chemical rockets we used to get to the moon. So there's definitely a push to advance some of that technology to get farther. And then as far as astrophysics, we have the James Webb Space Telescope launching next year, and we have the astronomy is going to advance, certainly in our understanding of exoplanets and other objects that are of interest. And so it just takes funding, of course, and a lot of planning. And so but we're moving along. We've come a long way, actually, I think, in terms of astronomy.
We will ask you to keep us posted and check back with you, Rachel Smith. But thank you for this update.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Smith is the head of the Astronomy and Astrophysics Research Lab at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. She's going to be speaking at the museum this Sunday. It's part of the International Sunday event. Takes place from 12:30 p.m. to 4 o'clock, and you can find out details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, how genetic ancestry tests can shift personal identities, especially for African Americans. We'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.